A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. Now, if it's your first time listening, these are the episodes where we dig deep into our sisterhood by asking each other a series of questions. But before we get into all of that, I have a separate question that I really want to ask Leanne. So, hi, Leanne.
Hi, what's up?
Have you ever, or can you think of a time where you've given yourself the ick?
Given myself the ick?
Like, you've done something that has almost disgusted yourself.
I don't know if this counts as giving myself the ick, but I went out when I was younger, a long time ago, and I was in this club, and it was a very, very dingy club. It was for my birthday. It was in Birmingham, in Wolverhampton, more specifically. Mm-hmm. And it was like a club that was like one way in, one way out. The door was like a metal door, so you couldn't see through it. It was very dodge. Anyway, true to form, I got a little bit too drunk, a little bit too high. And I got sick. Like, I was like, and my girlfriend Kemi, I think she saw my, no, it wasn't Kemi, it was Daniela Chilton. She's the boss. So Daniela saw my face and was like, yeah, it's time for us to go. Like, Leanne's about to be sick, so let's just leave. So we raced to the front door. And of course, they won't let us in out because there's too many people trying to come in. So they need to keep this metal door shut. And I like race to the bathroom to be sick. And it is the most disgusting bathroom I've ever seen in my entire life. But I couldn't help it. Like, I had to throw up. And Daniela came in and turned right back around. She was like, you're on your own. I can't stay in this place. And yeah, to this day, like, the imagery of it just gives me the absolute ick. But no, other than that, I can't think of anything. And I don't know if that counts as exactly what you were looking for, but
yeah, I don't really think there's a particular thing I was looking for, because I don't think it's often we talk about giving ourselves the ick or like platonic icks. I feel like icks are normally used in connection with a romantic partner or romantic mm-hmm. person we're like interested in. But I had an incident this week where I felt extremely, extremely embarrassed. And the next day I was like, no, I've given myself the ick of myself, and I've got to live with this. And
what was it?
So I'm, you know, in my dating bag at the moment. Mm-hmm. And an old guy kind of semi-circled back, semi-semi. And we've been talking. And it was a guy that I had a lot of history with, was really excited to speak to. And I definitely saw, like, changed behaviour, or at least I thought I did. And then I found myself kind of becoming triggered by behaviors from before, not necessarily like bad of him, but I just kind of felt myself going into the mode of like younger Shan. And we haven't spoken in like 6 years for context, yeah? And the reason why I gave myself the ick is because how I am and how I operate now is that if I want to stop talking to someone romantically, I'm not going to message you a paragraph like, oh, I need to stop talking to you because I'm just going to stop speaking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like often or not, when women do that, we do it because we want the person to rebuttal our suggestion. We do it because we want to feel validated in our feelings.
Yeah.
And as much as I'm aware of that, and I've been doing that for years, I tapped into that version of myself. So I was feeling hypersensitive, feeling a bit emotional. Mm-hmm. Not sad, but just like, I could feel my emotions on high alert, high vibrations. And so I wrote a paragraph, wasn't that long, but the point is I still wrote this paragraph and I sent it to him. And before I did it, I kept reading it, deleting parts, deleting, removing, adding in, da 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 da. And I gave myself my advice and I said, Shan, write it. And in the morning, if you still feel the same way, send it to him. But no, Rashan didn't listen to Rashan's advice. So I sent it. And in the morning when I looked at it, I just felt physically sick because I was like, why did I send that message? Why did I just not speak anymore? And not even in a way of like ghosting, but he obviously would have eventually called again. And when he called, yeah. Why didn't I then just have a conversation at that point? Why did I feel the need to go about it then in that way? And also the way I went about it probably wasn't the best because at one point I said something like not speaking again, which I don't really think is the worst thing because we haven't spoken in 6 years. But also it's like we actually did like hash things out. So that we also don't need that sort of tone to then end it on. And we've already just... Yeah. Put us in a really good place, but I just felt like I had the ick of myself because I was like, you know, Shan, at this big age, we don't need to be sending these messages to these boys. And also because for some people it will seem like, oh, she really cares, that's why. And actually I don't.
Yeah,
I just wanted to get out my emotions in that moment because my emotions were so highly vibrated at that time.
Mm-hmm. I definitely in that context have given myself the ick many times over, not recently obviously, but the amount of times that I've sent a message that I immediately regret. There was this message, I remember I was dating this guy and he was cheating on me with this girl and I knew who she was. This is ages ago. I think I was in early stages of uni undergrad. And she and I were in a group chat, completely unrelated. And I sent this long message disagreeing with everything that she said in the group chat because I was like, but I sent it to the wrong person. And I sent it to her instead of sending, I sent it to the group instead of sending it to somebody that I was, somebody else that was in the group that knew the situation. And so she saw it. And it definitely was very embarrassing because she was like, I don't know who you are and I don't know what this is about, but clearly you have an issue with me. And it was very embarrassing. And just the fact that I felt so petty to write the message that I wrote was very, mm-hmm. I gave myself the ick.
Well, I'm happy that we can share and create a support group in regards to this. Because I was just like, this is not a vibe. This is not a vibe at all.
It's in the past. Tomorrow, today is a new day.
No, it is. But you know, like to get over embarrassment, I feel like I have to share it.
For sure, because then it just replays in your head over and over again. And you need somebody else to tell you that actually it's not as bad as you think it is. Yeah. Or to tell you that actually it is as bad as you think it is. Well, I'm glad you felt comfortable to share with us today.
Mm-hmm.
On the note of sharing, shall we jump into these questions?
Sure.
I'll go first, actually. This is a good question. When was the moment you felt closest to me?
You know, they say, like, it's not always what someone says, it's how they make you feel. Mm. I feel like this rings true a lot, like, more than we actually deep. And I remember a series of times being around you and your friends, and despite being the newer friend to the group, and despite being significantly younger than the group, you never made that be apparent or that be a thing. Like, I feel like if someone else was in the group and they were, like, a fly on the wall, they'd have no idea that was the difference in dynamic. Yeah. And I feel like, often or not, when I'm with other people and their friends, I can always read the dynamic very easily. Like, it's always quite clear, like, these people know each other and then there's this other person. Mm. But I feel like you've always made me feel, like, really, really included when I'm around you and your friends. So much so that whenever you, like, offer to do something with your friends, you'll notice I'll never say no. Whereas my other friends, I do not spend time with their friends. Not because they're necessarily going to do that, but because of like, it doesn't feel like a safe space anymore. So I think when I then noticed like that sort of trait and that sort of behavior with you, it kind of reinforced the closeness that we had. Cause it was like, however conscious or unconscious those decisions were to make me feel like that, it still operates from a level of closeness that we have for each other. And then I think outside of that, we've also spoken quite early on in our sisterhood about like traumatic things that happened between us. And I think we're both prone to being oversharers. But I think in the aftermath of sharing with you, I didn't feel scared. And I felt like, oh, that was actually okay to do, despite the fact that I've known this person for probably less than a year or 2 years or whatever it was at the time. And I felt safe. And I think, I don't think you always have to have known someone for a long time or be extremely close to someone for a long time for them to make you feel safe. But I don't think a lot of people make me feel safe, like emotionally. So I think that those two examples combined reinforce the level of closeness that we have or had.
You know what's funny, a girlfriend of mine posted something the other day. It's like they call it an empowerment brunch, but really it's just a bunch of bean girls coming together. And I can't tell you how much that rang true for me. There are so many people that put on empowerment brunches that really are just them and their friends like hanging out or whatever it is, and it's so exclusionary, it's not even funny. And I find that in Jamaica, and more specifically, it's very much like a brown woman thing. Like there is a colorist element to it.
Really?
Yeah. Like I'll see loads of pictures of the empowerment brunch or women coming together, and there are no like dark skinned black women in the picture, which is annoys me to no end. But it reminded me that I think because we're oversharers, anybody that I bring into my group will automatically assume that it's somebody that I'm close to and somebody that I know that they would like. And they give me the benefit of the doubt to say, okay, Leanne's brought this person, like, let's make them family or whatever it is. And I've never had any of my girlfriends say to me, oh, your friends made me feel uncomfortable or whatever it is. And any friend that I did have, because I did have a friend like that, is no longer my friend, because I just don't have the time for that kind of, like, from a moral standpoint and like an ethical standpoint. I think we stand on the idea that we're embracing of all women at all of all backgrounds, of all forms, of all shapes, sizes, colors, etc. And to have somebody in my group that would be cliquish or discriminatory, for lack of a better word, against somebody else, it just is not. Yeah, you don't have to love the person, you don't have to become best friends, but you have to at least kind of be able to get along with somebody. And that's why the wedding was such a nice time, because I got to see everybody come together and like get to know each other independently and make their own bonds. It's really lovely.
I agree. So on that note then, because this is kind of linked to that question, how would you describe our relationship to others?
I guess I would say that I would start, you know me, you always say that I describe the objective thing and not necessarily how I feel about things. So if someone were to ask me, oh, like, who's Roshan and what's your relationship like? I would say, obviously, we're co-founders of a platform. And then I don't know. I would just say that we're friends. I don't know. Like, it's so hard for me to be, as you said, it's not hard. It is hard. It's hard for me to be emotive when I think about how I describe my friendship with someone. But I would just say she's one of my closest friends. We've known each other for a relatively short period of time and we got close really quickly. And now she's like my partner in empowerment. That's kind of how I describe you.
That's cute.
We're sisters in empowerment.
I don't think there has to be necessarily a lot of emotion attached to that. I feel like that would have been fine.
Okay. I mean, I have a girlfriend that I've known since I was a baby, and I don't think we hug each other. Like, like our form of emotion is saying thank you
Really?
Yeah, like the other day she was, because she just gave birth to a baby girl, and I went and met her and I bought something for the baby, and she was like, thanks Leah, I really appreciate it. But she meant it, you know what I mean? I felt it. But mm-hmm. I don't think we've ever said I love you. I have other friends that I tell I love them, but like, yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's something I'm more aware of recently, like how different my friends are when it comes to like emotions and like showing them, but then also like receiving them. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like I can talk to you about, even though you don't really share or lead with emotions necessarily. Actually, can I? For my friends who I know are not, do not, let's say, naturally, or do not lead with emotions, I don't think I lead with it to them either.
Mm.
But because I naturally lead with emotions, I will still on a surface level just talk about emotions, which for that person probably seems like a lot. But then if I was to compare it to a different friend who leads with emotion, it's a completely different level. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think you're particularly emotional. Like, I don't think you. I also wouldn't say that in the context of our relationship, even though I know that you have the capacity to lead with emotion, that you're an emotional person that way. I don't know that I would say that. And it's funny because I think it's so, people who don't know us, how obvious that is. Like I was at a work event the other day. So actually not the other day, several months ago. And my boss,
in 2023.
My boss, we had found this great space, or I had found this great space, and she came over and she gave me a hug and she was like, I know you don't do hugs, but, and I was like, but you've never tried to hug me before. How you know that I'm not into hugs? But I'm not. So she was clearly right. And something about my energy and my aura made it obvious that I am not a hugger.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because how do you know? Do I do hugs?
I don't know. Like, we hug, but we're not like huggers. You know,
and I feel like when I hug you, I'm doing it to annoy you because I know you're not a hugger. Like, I would just lay on you and be like, Leanne.
But then I have other friends who are extremely touchy-feely with me. It's very strange. And I think they do it to push me. Like my friend Karine, who's a therapist, she will literally come and lay in my lap. And like, it's fine. I don't have a problem. I'm not going to move her. But also, she clearly feels comfortable doing it, even though she knows I'm not particularly comfortable with it. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. When was the last time I misunderstood you, and why do you think I did?
I don't think I can think of a specific. I don't think I can think of a specific time that you misunderstood me. So maybe when I finish my answer, you can tell me. You could tell me when you maybe misunderstood me. I do think though, actually, I do think that something that I do to you is misunderstood. Is that the same?
I guess so. I mean, I think it works.
But I don't know if I'm reading into this too deeply. So let's unpack together.
Let's unpack.
Over the course of the last few episodes we've done, I've learned about you that like criticism and being told certain things isn't necessarily something that you enjoy, yeah, which a lot of people probably wouldn't, okay? And I feel like sometimes with the nature of the stuff that we do, I don't think I'm criticizing you. I feel like I'm saying to you like suggestions to benefit us both.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's always received in that way. But I don't know if I'm reading into it too deeply because I've now learned about that recently. So I'm not saying that there's something you say that makes me feel like me feel like that you think that I'm criticizing you. But since I've learned that about you, I feel like I've been more sensitive since then to then like flag things or suggest things. So I'm like, fuck, does she think I'm criticizing her? Because I'm not. I'm just, I've been saying this would be better if we do that.
No, I think. Yeah, I know what you mean. And actually, I have noticed a shift in the way that you mention things to me sometimes in the past, like maybe I would say in the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And actually, I have an appreciation for it. And I'll tell you why. It's not that I viewed what you were doing before as criticism, but I feel like I am in a space in my life at the moment where criticism is coming hard and fast all the time. Right. And so it's not so much that the criticism in and of itself is problematic for me, or let's call your suggestions, let's not call it criticism, but your suggestions feel like criticism. It's that right now, I think I appreciate grace wherever I can get it from.
And you did say that in that episode. You said something along the lines of, if you need people to find like kind of ways to give you criticism.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember when you said that, I thought something that I know I come across at, which can be a flaw to some people, is that I'm very direct.
Yeah, direct. So, I was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like when you said that, I thought, fuck, if this is something that is an issue for Lee, maybe this is an example of where I need to make sure I'm obviously being direct still, but also being aware of how direct I'm being when I'm saying it. So like I will send text, for example. This sounds so silly, yeah? But I'll send text, for example, without an emoji or without an XX. And because it's a text, it's like, well, what tone is she saying this in? Is she saying it because she's annoyed, or is she just saying it? And actually, yeah. I'm always doing 101 things. Or I might have decided I wanted to send you this message at 10 a.m., but I didn't want you to wake up to that because of our time difference. So now I've waited. And when I've remembered this lunchtime, and I've talked to my boss, so I've just quickly texted it. Do you get what I mean? So it's just kind of been something that's made that I've tried to be more conscious of. But yeah, going back to the original question, I can't think of a time where I was misunderstood. But I feel like, probably owing to me being hypersensitive, I feel like maybe my suggestions were being misunderstood.
No, they definitely weren't being misunderstood. And as I said, as a standalone, I don't take them as criticisms. And for sure, like, obviously there are things that you're way more invested in than I am as we're growing this thing, right? So, and there are just things that I inherently don't like doing that are more your bag. So I'm all ears and open to listening to those pieces of advice or those suggestions, whatever it is that we want to call them. But like everything else around me at the moment is very heavy on criticism or disagreement or... And it's nice. And I guess I appreciate the fact that you took notice of that. And not because you're doing anything wrong, but just to make, just in consideration of how I'm feeling at this very moment in time. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
No problem. What do you think drives me?
I think most people are driven by fear of failure. And I don't think you're an exception to that. I mean, I'm driven by not wanting to fail as well. But I think even more specifically, there is like a certain level of responsibility that I think you have around your family and your friends to a lesser extent, but definitely siblings that drive you to make sure that not just that you're doing well, like, or that you're consistently like leveling up, but also that you're being a good person. Like setting a good example for them. So I would say those are at least two of the things that drive you.
I think that's true. I think if it was to add a third one, it would be that I want to be on a yacht, kicking my ass in a thong. And I need money for the yacht and the driver and the liquor. But yeah, I definitely think that that's true.
Yeah, I think... More so than anything, like, your dedication to the kids is a standout, like, feature of almost everything that you do.
I was on a date the other day, and I was talking to this guy. And, no, actually, it wasn't on the date. It was after the date. I was talking to this guy, and he was talking about his children and how he's a really active dad. And, you know, for some women, that's been a problem for them. And I was like, it's okay, I have kids too. And he was like, you do? And I was like, oh no, sorry, I don't. And I'm like, it's so ingrained in me that my youngest siblings are my kids. So I'm really telling the guy on the date, like, yeah, I got baby, we're both baby mamas and baby fathers. And it's like, I am childless. I don't have a kid. I don't have a man. I don't know where that came from, but here I was spreading that fake news.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a complete lie.
Yeah, no, not really. I have inherited children.
I wonder how your mom, like, do you and your mom both say that you have kids in the same place at the same time?
No, but if I'm with my mom, I'll say that my younger sister's my daughter. Okay. I'll be like, yeah, this is my daughter. And my mom's just like, yeah, so these are my two girls. Mm-hmm. This is the oldest one. And I'm like, yeah, this is my daughter. Because I always make me and my sister, my younger sister, I make us match a lot.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah, so like at Christmas, this was just pure luck. She was wearing an orange jumper and then like khaki green bomber jacket. And I've got like a khaki green trench coat and I had an orange hoodie. So when I saw her putting it on, I put it on too. And when we went out to like Winter Wonderland or whatever in Birmingham, the family was like, since when was there a dress code memo? And I'm like, no, just me and my daughter. This is what we're doing. And it was just funny because like us two love rides, like we're really big thrill seekers, whereas like the other siblings aren't so much. My sister on my dad's side definitely is, but she wasn't with us at Christmas. And we were just like, everyone's at the Winter Wonderland thing, doing ice skating, doing this, doing that. And we were just walking around, minding our own business, going on all the rides. Like, nobody paid us any attention. And we just had so much fun. And I was like, this is why you're my child.
You know what's funny is that I think men in general don't like thrill rides. Like, the more older I get is the more I know men that are afraid of going on roller coasters. Like, they're just like, nope, not doing it.
Big babies. And do you know what it is? They're scared to be screaming like a little girl. It's toxic masculinity. They don't want to be next to you on the ride going, ah! Yeah, and then coming off and doing bad man. No.
I remember I went to Winter Wonderland one year and the guy I was dating at the time, he and I went, and there was a guy in front of us on the ride. And I get really nervous on rides. I have a love-hate relationship with them. Like, I love them, but leading up to getting on it, I'm like, almost in tears. Like, that's the level of anxiety that I have about it. But there was this guy on there, obviously on a date as well, in front of us, because it was like a two-seater ride or whatever, and he screamed so loud the entire ride that by the time the ride ended, everybody was laughing, and the woman was so embarrassed. And I was just like, poor guy, like, this is why men don't do it, because you have to keep up that, like,
yeah. I think if I was on a date with a guy and he was doing that, I don't think I'd be able to focus on the ride. I'd be in so much stitches from him acting like that. Because the thing is, I'm like you, yeah. Like, I remember I went on a ride in Vegas and I was crying. I was holding this stranger's hand because Tash, my best friend who came with me, didn't come on the ride. She was like, I'm not coming on the ride with you, but I'll come with you. This stranger is holding my hand and she's breaking down the mechanics. She's like, I studied, I don't know what it is, yeah, some structural engineering, and the reason why this won't break down on us is because of this and that. And she was explaining it, and I'm like, sis, this makes sense to you, but not me. Honestly, if I'm gonna die, isn't it? Like, but then it's weird because you go through all of that, but then you still go on the ride, and then you have a great time.
And then you have a great time. It's weird.
Yeah, I would never go on that again, though.
There are no rides that I won't go on yet.
Really?
There's a ride at Disney World. Because I've been trying to convince Barry for us to do a Disney World trip with my stepson, my bonus son, and there are certain rides that I'm like, not doing it, not happening. So, you know, who do you think has the greatest influence on our relationship? It's an interesting one, actually. I'll tell you who has the biggest influence on our relationship: our community.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like so much of what we do professionally is directed by them. And so we're always thinking about what we're producing in relation to what the need is or what the gap is. And so I think, you know, even when we were, you know, for those of you who have been listening for a longer time, Shannon and I used to record separately. And while practically it made sense, just logistics wise. Our community was like, no, actually, we need you guys back together. And it was so much better when you guys were recording and having that like sisterhood and that relationship. So this new revamp of the Unapologetically Black podcast was largely seeded by the input of our community. And so I would say they have the biggest influence on our relationship, at least professionally.
Yeah. I think I echo that. I don't really think I have much to add to that. I think, I don't know. It's such a weird way. I don't think, maybe because I'm just trying to think of other friends, and if I was to add, say, with them and me, who influences more, I don't think I view friendship or sisterhood in a way of like one outweighing the other for me to be able to look at it in such black and white metrics, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, in the same way that I was able to say, like, earlier on when we was talking about the criticism thing, and I was able to be like, when you mentioned that, I thought it was a dig, but I was able to tell myself straight away that it wasn't, because our friendship doesn't have digs. That's not even been the proximity of our relationship. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. So I think even in the same way, I think, I feel like the reason why in any relationship the influence may be imbalanced would be because of like a dominant figure. So like, you know, in like a romantic relationship where your relationship set up in a way that the man is the head of the household, so maybe he might have a more of an influence. So even if it's a subject area or a topic where you have more knowledge, he still has final say. So in that instance, it's like the influence still comes from him because he's the one that's driving everything. Whereas I feel like where our friendship or sisterhood is equally yoked and we both listen to each other's opinions, each other's standpoints and stuff like that equally, like in terms of us listening and then implementing, I think it kind of works in that way. That which is actually rings true to the other day I messaged you something that you did and I was like, oh, I think we should do it like this, and then you was like, cool, and I was thinking, no, but not cool.
You were like, do you agree with me?
I don't want you to change it because I've said I want you to change it because you agree. If you don't agree, because it's not a thing that's like black or white, that's right or wrong. Do you get what I mean? So it's like, if you don't agree or you don't see the value in it, then we don't actually need to do it. But just, that was why I followed that, which brings true to my point that I don't think it's either. Because if I thought it was me, I would be like, I would have left that. And if I thought it was you, I wouldn't have suggested it. Do you get what I mean?
I outside of the community, in terms of our professional, like personally, I don't think there's anybody that has a strong, because I guess also we didn't grow up as childhood friends. We made friends as two like self-sustainable, independent adults. So there's no like dependency there, but there's also no, like we didn't have parents who nurtured our friendship. Like it's been purely us that has driven it. So
that's interesting, actually, because I said earlier, maybe I redact my comment. I said earlier that it does, I don't think it applies with friends, because I don't see it as unequally, but I can think of friends that I've known maybe when I was younger, where maybe the dynamic was that I was more of the mature one. So because of that, I do probably have a more of a natural influence in our relationship. Even though I still think you try to approach it from a 50-50. But I think it's, you know, the example I gave just now where I went back to say, you know, do you agree? I kind of feel like that happens like a lot in that friendship where I'm always being like, but do you actually want to do this? Do you actually agree? Because I kind of feel like they kind of look at it as like, Rashan knows, so it's fine.
Has it in the bag,
Okay, my last question. What do you wish I healed for you and why?
This is probably going back to something that you said the other day. So you said this on a previous episode about my, like, not leading with emotion and struggling with vulnerability, even for with people that I'm close to. And it's weird, right? Because as you said, I'm an oversharer, but I'm not necessarily vulnerable, which is, there's a distinction between transparency and vulnerability. And I've learned this in therapy as well, where people who are observing me will say, I'm an explainer, but I don't necessarily lead with emotion. Like, I'm not an emotive person, which it's funny. I always thought I was an emotive person. And I think that you saying that out loud and saying it in the way that you said it on the podcast really gave me like pause and gave me moment of reflection to say, but I do want to be vulnerable, and I do want to be able to take that risk of being vulnerable with people who have genuinely shown me that I can trust them, right? Not everybody, but certainly, like, my siblings have gotten a lot better at being, like, emotionally there for me, because we're all not really particularly emotional characters. And I have another girlfriend who I won't say her name, no, but she's, you know her. And she really would love for me to share deeply more. Like, I do. It's not as I don't. And she's been there for me through some really shitty periods in my life. But she wants to help. Like, it's not a disingenuous thing. She wants me to share with her so that she can be there for me. And I almost don't let her in certain instances. And it's only something that I realized after having this conversation with you. And I don't know how to, there's an element of not wanting to share with her because I don't know if I'm ready for her to fix what needs to be fixed. It's a weird thing, like, it's a weird dynamic. And I almost want to share after I've fixed it for myself. And that might be, like, you know, trauma response, hyper independence, all of that.
And I think sometimes with, like, difficult things or sensitive things, it's like sharing it with somebody else almost forces you to accept that that thing happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like what I spoke to you about at the start of this podcast about being embarrassed. And it's like, I wanted to share it with you. Yeah. That's in a way that it benefits me, that we can, like, accept it and laugh about it and move on. Yeah. But if it was something that was actually really touchy to my emotions, me sharing it and having to accept it would reinforce the idea that I actually went through that. Whereas with this situation, it's the same thing, but we're able to laugh at it because it's trivial and it's not that deep.
Yeah.
Remember we had a conversation on the pod and I said to you, oh, do you struggle with hyper-independency?
Mm-hmm.
And you was like, yeah, of course. And I think that might have been the same conversation of what you were just referencing a minute ago. I had a friend that I asked her, like, she's my friend since I was 11. And I literally said to her, you know, do you feel comfortable talking to me about issues and, like, things that are going on in your life? Because when I actually deep it, since the age of 11, I've been your bestest friend since 11. And I actually can't really tell you anything, not that traumatic that has happened. And maybe it hasn't happened. I'm not trying to say trauma happens to everyone, but if things have happened, I'm not aware of it. And I feel like I would have been the person that you would have gone to. And she was just like, yeah, I don't really feel comfortable. I feel like if I'm sharing what I'm going through, I'm burdening myself on somebody else.
Mm.
And for me, it was such a weird thing to have to, like, understand, because the level of closeness that we have, I couldn't see why she would view it as a burden.
I think that's why it feels like a burden, though, is because you are so close. Like, the same thing that I struggle to tell my friend, I don't struggle to tell a complete stranger.
Oh, okay.
And I think sometimes when you admit something to someone that you're really close to, they're going to push you to deal with it. They're going to push you to address it. They're going to want to talk about it. They're going to want to help heal you. And sometimes going through the healing is even harder than the issue itself.
No, I agree. It's like with navigating grief, I found it easier to sometimes ignore text messages from my closest friends. And to not see my closest friends, and then to go out with, like, not so close friends, social friends, because it's like, you guys aren't close enough to me where you're going to ask me, how are you really feeling? So I can actually come here and just ignore everything that's going on and ignore how I'm feeling because of that. Whereas if I'm with my close friends, even if I'm happy and jolly, they're going to see the twinkle in my eye that's not twinkling, and they're going to know that. I remember when we won the award in September. And my friend messaged me, like, congrats on your award, something, something, something. I can see the twinkle in your eyes gone. And I just felt so emotional because I was like, you wasn't even there with me. But you saw in that moment from a picture that I wasn't operating from the same version of myself. And it kind of reinforces why, like, someone like her would maybe run away from being around. Because it's like, you see me nakedly, even when I'm not showing up in a naked way.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, guys, we could talk all day, but we're going to save some more talking for you next week. So, see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.